Okay, first of all, again, I'd like to thank, as Don did, NACA for inviting me to give this talk. Like Don, I prefer to use Appen's instead of EMS. And from what we've done, there we can be sure that IMNV is not the cause of this problem, and neither is the microsplitting that's been discovered. If I have time at the end, I would talk about a new Gregorian-like agent we found, and that also not the cause. So the big breakthrough was Don's description, giving us a precise kind of case definition from this. And I think later, I wonder if we can add a bleb of the tubule epithelium as another feature of this. This is something we found in when we did a semi-thin sections in preparation for electron microscopy. Usually the outer margin of the tubule is smooth like this with some sheath cells. And what happened is the muscle fibers there are pulled to the side and the basement membrane is blebbing out into the hemal sinus. And we found this in samples of EMS from Thailand, from Vietnam, from Malaysia. And I wonder whether this might not be added. We can talk about it as another feature of Appen's. So these are from Thailand. Same thing. It's not very easy to see in 4-micron sections. If they're thinner sections, they show up very well in semi-thin section. This from the same thing from samples from Malaysia. So I don't know if it's. And to me, this looks like the effect of some kind of toxin. There's no evidence of any bacteria or anything in here, so it looks like there must be some other thing like a toxic cause. One of the problems with using this thing, EMS, is people are using it for anything that dies within 35 days, and it's a whole mixture of all kinds of stuff, and it's causing a lot of confusion. Don said, some samples have white spot. In Thailand recently, we worked closely with Dr. Chalora Nitti at Kasetsad, and they usually pack screen the samples before they send them to us to look at. And we've had yellowhead, white spot, so we knocked that stuff out. It's got nothing to do with the problem. So the work that we're doing, we clear first to make sure the case definition is correct before we put the shrimp through the analysis. So this precise case definition is a real big breakthrough in work on this thing, and I would like people to stick to Appen's to it and not use this thing EMS. So I did this little diagram. EMS is dying within 35 days. In some, you need to look at the shrimp. You have to do the histology to confirm it. So it will end up with the septicemia. That's like the final stage. And sometimes, my problem with early samples I got was everything looked like this. I couldn't see anything until I met Don in Vietnam. It was like the light, somebody turning on the light and saying, okay, this is a final stage, and that's mostly what I saw. So I couldn't see all the earlier stuff. And sometimes I've seen samples like this. People say EMS. This could be caused by Vibrio or some other thing. The epithelium of the hepatopancreas is shrunken. And, if this is caused by Vibrio, which it can be in some cases, it can end up looking like this at the end. I've seen things like this where the cells are sloughing. They're still differentiated to BRF cells, and there's a normal kind of division of the E cells. I don't know what the cause of this is, but I think it can also end up like this. And sometimes they're just normal bacterial Vibrio infections that start out being, a few focal lesions here and there. They can also end up like this. So if people get this and they see that and call it EMS, you can't do it. I wouldn't take that as a sample to use for. You need some other evidence that the massive sloughing of cells and the loss of dysfunction that preceded this final step. So our sample, we're just looking at this. And maybe if we can get people to say, okay, we call EMS anything that dies in less than 35 days. But then you have to say, is this case of EMS Appen's, or is it some other thing? Otherwise, we're really going to get confused trying to sort out what is the cause if we're not looking at all the same thing. So these causes, Don has already gone through them. In our group, we decided to have a look at bacteria, even though it looked like bacteria would not be the cause, certainly not the secondary bacterial infection phase. But there may be some other bacteria that are there in such a small quantity that you cannot see them with in the early stages of infection. And we also want to check whether a bacteria infected with a bacterial phage might be the cause. Say the bacterium itself without the phage wouldn't kill the shrimp, but so it's a kind of virus, but not a shrimp virus. And we also want to look at viral etiology, even though, as Don said, the tests done by CP Group and other people with cell-free homogenase, they don't cause any disease. But okay, we have a look because we can do this rapid, massive sequencing now at very low cost. And so it cuts out a lot of the steps that are usually involved with the molecular cloning. One of the things I keep reminding people is you have to be very careful when you take the sample. This is a cross-section of a shrimp. This is the mouth and the esophagus, the anterior chamber of the stomach and the posterior chamber, and the intestine. And you can see that the posterior chamber of the stomach and the intestine are inside the hepatopancreas. And sometimes people take a pair of scissors, you know, they cut here and then they cut there. And they take the whole thing and stick it in a test tube and homogenize it. So they would just get a mess. You know, it would be full of all the bacteria that are in the stomach and the intestine of the shrimp, and it may not be in the hepatopancreas at all. So we were always taking our samples from only hepatopancreatic tissue and very careful not to disturb these things in the center of the hepatopancreas that can contaminate everything and then lead to bad results. So we started out with this first sample. We have another one being processed, so this is still very preliminary work. It turned out that one of our controls was not useful. It got contaminated somehow, so we ended up with only one control. And then we had two Appen's pons from Vietnam and four from Thailand. We took the hepatopancreatic material from each pond was pooled from several shrimp and then extracted the DNA from that. And each pooled sample separately extracted, and then we used universal primers that are used by people who study bacterial metagenomics, like environmental samples of to try to amplify all, as with Dawn, a universal bacterial primer. And then those samples, once they were prepared, each one was tagged with a barcode of 9 bases. And then we can put the whole business together onto one chip and do a sequencing with the Roche 454 machine. And then we can separate the sequences later by the barcodes, which came from which pond. So this is the result of the total sort of overall sequencing. We can get 41 million bases. You know, this costs very little. And now it costs very little. And this came out with 103,000 individual reads. And then you need a bioinformatics specialist. So Dr. Anupap, who is here, if you want to know about the details of the screening, it's pretty complicated. You need to get rid of things called chimeric sequences. We got rid of everything that didn't have primers sequence on both ends. And we didn't consider anything that was under 450 or over 550. So after cleanup, we ended up with altogether around 8,000 sequences. And then we said, okay, these are like organizational taxonomic units. So they're different. So they're like contigs that have a sequence similarity of a 97% up. Then that's one kind of sequence, consensus sequence. And we also eliminated all the ones that were found with like only one from one pond. whether multiple or single sequence from one point. We just cut them out, and we ended up with a 1,200, and then subjected this to screening to find out which one, were there any bacteria that were only found in the problem ponds and not in the control group. And the answer to that was no. Whatever we found was found in both. However, the numbers of these things were way above the numbers of these in the affected ponds were way above those in the control pond, and we were shocked. We never even heard of these things. We had some Vibrio, but they were a very low number in the population. And when we do isolation tests by streaking on the media, usually we get Vibrio. So I don't know what to do. Anyway, these are gram-negative bacteria. These are gram-positive. The next step is to try to devise a specific probe for in situ hybridization. We couldn't do it with the ribosomal RNA, so we focused on these two to start with because they were by far the most dominant. And we couldn't design a specific probe from the ribosomal RNA fragment we got, because they had too much overlap. So we tried to design specific probes from other genes from these two bacterial genera, but they didn't work either with our samples. So we're still trying to solve this problem, how to develop a specific probe that we can use for in situ hybridization to find out whether these bacteria are really in the samples that we're studying. We are also checking to see if there might be a phage involved. I don't know if you know that Vibrio cholerae, for example, it causes cholera, but only if it's infected with or lysogenized with CTX bacteriophage. So most of the Vibrio cholerae in the environment is all around us all the time, in the tropics, in the water, and so on. And it doesn't cause cholera. It doesn't do anything. But if it gets in, if it takes on a CTX phage and gets inserted into the genome, then the toxin gene, CTX toxin, is coming from the bacterial phage, but it's produced by the bacterial host, and then it causes cholera. This is the same thing with diphtheria. The bacteria that causes diphtheria needs to have a phage inside it before it can produce a diphtheria toxin. And in Australia, Lee Owens' group has found a Vibrio phage that makes Vibrio harveyi more toxic to the shrimp, and we have one in Thailand called VHS1. So sometimes these things, in subculture, they can be cured. The phage gets lost. So we're looking at this. Basically, the bacteria by itself doesn't cause disease. If you inject this by itself, if you had a cell-free extract, this by itself wouldn't do anything. Once the phage attaches to the thing and injects its genomic material, it alters. What is happening? Must be putting two at once. It can alter the bacterial cells, so it changes from being non-toxic to toxic. Sometimes this genetic material is free in the bacterial cell. Sometimes it's inserted in the genome. This is very stable. This is not so stable. They can be cured easily. So looking for this, you can look for clear plaques in the bacterial colonies on isolation plates. That doesn't happen very often. The other is to isolate bacteria from the shrimp hepatopancreas. So you get all of these by streaking on TSA or TCBS or some other medium, and then take some hepatopancreatic material, homogenize it, and then make a cell-free extract, and then you drop those extracts onto the lawns of your individual bacterial isolates and look for clear zones that would be plaques caused by the phage infection. So use the cell-free filtrate. We also look with electron microscope, and this is one of the samples from Vietnam that shows that this is a very small bacterial phage. You can't see the tail for it very well, but it's many of them attached to this bacterial cell. And these are bacteria in the tubule of the infected shrimp. And they also show developing phage particles. So we know that some samples do have bacterial phages in them. And this is one sample in time. We don't know what the bacterium is yet. We're doing that also by ribosomal RNA sequence. But we have a pair of bacteriophage and bacterium, and we've given them to Dr. Chalor and Dr. Nitti. They're doing the, right now, they're doing the bioassay to find out whether this combination will kill the shrimp. So you inject the phage alone, inject the bacteria alone, and then inject the combination and look at the difference. The people at CEP Group have identified two other partnerships, another bacterium, two different species with different phage partners. They're doing the same thing. So we'll find out whether this thing may be involved. And for testing for viruses, we're doing the same thing by like a shotgun technique. Take away the hepatocrytic material and then homogenize it and centrifuge out the debris, and then remove the supernatant and filter it with a 0.22 micron filter, check that there are no bacteria there, and then you can dilute it by 100 times, inject it into the shrimp. And most people have done this and say that results are always negative. Don't get any mortality or Appen's histopathology. But most of this stuff not been published yet. So for shotgun cloning, we have no results so far. The samples have not been sequenced, but they're already in the queue for the sequencer. So we have samples that are prepared as in the previous slide, except we take the supernatant solution then and put it in the ultracentrifuge and spin down what any viral particles that would be there. And then we extract the total nucleic acid from the pellet. Sometimes we also resuspend the pellet and treat it with RNAs and DNAs to make sure there's no free RNA or DNA in the sample. Then we extract RNA and DNA, make cDNA from the RNA, and then take the DNA, and then just send the whole thing for sequencing. If you don't get enough nucleic acid from the original extraction, you can do random amplification of the DNA and cDNA to get more copies before sending it for sequencing. And then you get it back and give it to the bioinformatics people and look for anything in there that might be a new virus. So that's it. That's what we're doing. And as with Don's work, we have no conclusions. We cannot say anything. And it is a real shock to... I'm looking forward to the results from the second batch of bacterial samples that we prepared, because that batch has samples from China, from Vietnam, and from Thailand. And I want to see if we get the same profile as we did the last time. I'm quite shocked not to get what we expected. And I don't know what to do with those bacteria that we found. They're associated with water, marine and soil and water, and both freshwater and marine. So it's possible they have some role. But so far, there are no reports of those things. One report of Delphtia lithopinae described from Taiwan, but not as a pathogen. So that's it. Oh, let me add one thing I forgot. Do I have a little time? Okay, just in the last few weeks, we found a totally new gregarine. I think it's a gregarine. It looks something like a gregarine, but not like any gregarine has ever been seen before. Dr. Jirasak from Chulalongkorn University said that white feces syndrome was caused by a gregarine. But I didn't see anything that looked like this in his slides. Dr. Wisanu from Kazetsad University, we compared results the other day, and he got this thing too. It's quite small, and it's very transparent, finger-shaped things, and they're right inside the tubules, all the way inside the tubules of the hepatopancreas. And some of them producing what look like gametocysts, reproductive stage. When they get senescent, they turn into kind of folded membrane-like structures that are very hard to see. And when you use a Davidson, this is a smear made from the same material. So these are the gametocysts inside this thing. We don't see any nuclei or anything like you would traditionally see. They don't have any, there's no segmentation. And these gametocysts free in the, it looked like this with the high magnification with the microscope. And something very interesting is that in this shrimp that are infected with these things, there's a kind of a fibrous network between the in the interstitial spaces where these things are producing some kind of multiplicative stage. And I think they go from there into the tubule where they form the vermicular form stage. And they're sort of in compartments around the outside of the pedal pancreas. Maybe these things are moving into the tubule. So this is a very strange kind of fibrous network associated with this pathogen. And sometimes with the, when you fix the tissue with Davin's fixative, I saw this two or three years ago when they were talking about Gregory's. I said, I don't know. I thought that these were membrane-like things being assembled from stuff discharged into the tubule, that they start to accumulate together and then join to make something until they get very dense and look somewhat vermicular form. But actually, it's the other way around. It starts out as a Gregorian like this, and then it starts to fall apart until you end up with something very faint like this. It almost looks like the other material in the, but actually it's not. And you can see all phases in the gradation. And these things in this, at first, they look like Gregorians at low magnification. When you look at high magnification, it's just a bunch of membrane-like things stuck together. No nuclei, no. Then there's nothing wrong with the fixation of the tissue, but these things don't remain intact. So I'm sure this thing has nothing to do with Appen's, but we've seen these networks. We've seen these things and these networks in both Monodon and in Vaname. So, but I think it's not. It's not associated, like the microsporidia, not associated with Appen's. If anybody wants to talk about that, we can. Hey, thanks.